Blog Talk Radio.
Midweek fantasy podcast. I guess we're still fantasy baseball live, but we're not here every Sunday. We're here mostly every Wednesday. I upped it to about 9:30 tonight as I was going to go back down to Wilmington, but I had been there on Monday and Tuesday watching the Salem Red Sox against the Wilmington Blue Rock, which is the high A teams of the Red Sox, obviously, and the Kansas City Royals. That Kansas City Royals team is not very good. They don't really have any prospects at all. But I'll tell you at the end of the show a little bit about my who I saw out with the Salem Red Sox, including Manny Margot. Guys, if you want to get a hold of me, the best way to do that is on the Twitter at Rich Wilson FSG. Of course, you can get my partner in crime on Sunday nights, the great Tim McCloud at Timothy LMC, at Timothy LMC. Go out to our Facebook page, Dynasty League Groups, Prospect 361 Dynasty League Group, or just send me a tweet and I will send you the proper address so that you can join that group. I think we're up almost to 1,100 members now. The great Alan Sarvinus does a really good job at managing that and keeps the content really flowing. And of course, go out and rate and review us on iTunes and getting a lot of nice reviews. And we definitely appreciate that because we get paid nothing to do this. Maybe a little bit from our sponsors, but it's just enough to really cover the cost of doing the show. Guys, again, brief podcast tonight. I'm really going to talk primarily about some under the radar pitchers. I say under the radar pitchers, not the right word, underperforming pitchers that you might want to consider adding to your team. We did this about a month ago where I gave you seven or eight pitchers underperforming and seven or eight pitchers overperforming based on a lot of different factors. I'm going to go through that same kind of list today. You're going to see some repeat names. I won't go over them too much, but a couple of new names have crept up that either might want to go try to buy low on those guys, or maybe they're sitting on the waiver wire and might be worth a spin. I know this resonated fairly well with everybody last time I did it. And then next week at the midweek podcast, we'll be doing my top 50, midseason top 50. I get it out there several weeks before everybody else does. And yes, I'm aware that Byron Buxton and Francisco Lindor have been promoted, but it had already gone to press by the time those guys had been called up, and it just went out as is. I put a little editor's note, or my editor put an editor's note out there saying that we're aware of it, but still people are telling me that, oh, did you hear Byron Buxton got called up? Yes, I am aware. Anyway, before we start with these underperforming pitchers that you might want to pick up, I want to give you a little bit of my commentary on what happened yesterday with the Houston Astros and the St. Louis Cardinals. What a crazy story. Corporate espionage hits Major League Baseball in a big way. So for those of you who have not heard, the Cardinals are under investigation by the FBI for hacking into the Houston Astros network last year. If you recall, it was mid-season last year, and it got leaked onto the internet, a list of trades that Jeff Luhnow and his organization have been involved with. And these crazy, almost like fantasy baseball trades, where I'll give you a lousy prospect or two and you give me Clayton Kershaw. That wasn't the name, but those were the kind of trades. And Tim and I made fun of that. And I think the whole industry made fun of that. Well, Jeff Luhnow and the Houston Astros were not at all happy with what happened. I thought it was an inside job, somebody trying to embarrass Jeff Luhnow within the Houston Astros organization. It turns out that obviously the Cardinals are in investigation. The Astros contacted the FBI and said, you need to investigate that. Led back to somebody who works for the Cardinals out of their home, using their home computer to basically break in. If you don't know, what's interesting about this is Jeff Luhnow used to work for the St. Louis Cardinals. And in fact, many people attribute him. In fact, I do to a certain extent to much of the success in the last, you know, number, probably 5 to 10 years of the Cardinals in terms of what he was able to do first as player development manager, then as assistant general manager, and really building that team and plucking guys out like Alan Craig. Can kind of equate him to a Preston Tucker type of player, guys who really overperform their draft status, and then bringing in some really high-end Latin players like C-Mar, Carlos Martinez, you know, et cetera. And, you know, he was really the orchestrator of many of those players, Matt Carpenter, another guy, to bringing those guys in. And, you know, it's amazing that the Cardinals are being investigated, because if you think of like a gold standard for, you know, how teams should be run and so forth, it is the Cardinals. I mean, gold standards usually kind of, you think of it in medical terms, if you've ever had a a treadmill test, you know, on your heart, you know, when you have the sonogram on your heart and you're doing the treadmill, and they see something, and this happened to me about 10 years ago. You have an annual physical and they do all those kinds of tests. And I remember the doctor going, "I see something." And I'm like, "What do you mean you see something?" Back then I was probably running 50 miles a week. And I'm like, "How can you possibly see anything? I'm healthy as a horse." And he says, I don't know, but we need to go in for the gold standard, which is a catheterization, which is, you know, they go through your groin and then they look into your veins and your arteries to find out if there's a problem or not. And sure enough, there was no problem. I had a slightly enlarged heart that I just needed to stop running as much. And about a year later, the heart got back to normal. But you hear those types of things as gold standards, but you don't usually hear as a Major League Baseball organization's gold standard. But if there is going to be one, I think it is the St. Louis Cardinals. So it's odd that it involved them. But if you think about the espionage and who it was against, it's either a couple of rogue employees within the Cardinals organization who have got a vendetta against Jeff Luhnow, or were trying to maybe prove, and I'm speculating here, that they copied much of the same internal site that Luhnow built when he was with the Cardinals, which was called Redbird, and now the Houston Astros put something out. I think it was called Ground Zero. And my guess is it probably had similar security fingerprints, and they were able to break into it just because of similarity between the two. And what's weird is you call it corporate espionage, but usually in those types of situation, you usually keep the information to yourself so you can use it to your advantage. But back then, a year ago, the Astros were terrible. So, I mean, what could they have possibly had that the Cardinals didn't have? And secondly, they put all the stuff out on the internet. Or at least we think they did. Maybe they held some stuff back. Don't know. But it sure looked like they put a lot of stuff out on the internet. So it looks like it was a smear campaign of Jeff Luhnow. The investigation will go on. And I hope for the Cardinals' sake that it is simply a couple of rogue employees who wanted to do that or John and not involve John Mozeliak. But if it did, imagine the ramifications in that organization. Or if the GM was involved, hopefully he insulated himself well enough so it can't be all brought all the way up to him. But it is a mess, a big mess, because as the investigation goes onward, I mean, this will lead to potentially criminal indictments and so forth. But then how is Major League Baseball, what we care about is how is Major League Baseball going to respond? And I think if it's, you know, again, a couple of employees, that's one thing. But if it's found out that it's any higher level up in the organization, I mean, you can see everything from fines to potentially draft picks taken away. Where I was even thinking, would they do something like they do in college sports and possibly ban them from postseason play? Imagine that. Let's say that it does go all the way to the top and Major League Baseball goes, for the next 2 years, you can't participate in postseason games. I mean, that would be amazing, you know, but I mean, at some point they can't, you're going to have to set an example and a fairly stern example that we're not going to put up with this. And yeah, you've always had baseball teams stealing signs. And, you know, there was talk, a couple of years ago, that there was a guy in a white shirt out in Toronto flashing signs of, you know, what was a curveball and a slide. I don't know how in the world they were possibly doing that. and it doesn't seem like that matters because that team, and Timmy and I will talk about that next Sunday, what an offensive team with Bautista and Josh Donaldson and Edwin Encarnacion. I mean, that's a ridiculous offensive team. They're getting shut out by the Mets the last time I looked tonight. But that kind of stuff is always going on, but actually breaking into networks and so forth, way over the top. So I would guess it's probably loss of draft picks, but it would be totally wild if it was something barring them from play in the postseason. And you know, I've got them going to the playoffs as well. What if they made all the way to the playoffs and something bad happens there, and you know, they somehow, you know, what if they won the title and but they stripped the title? I don't know, probably not, but it is fascinating to think about that. So I love this kind of aspect to sports. I love the kind of behind the scenes stuff because it does provide a kind of an interesting drama, and it is baseball, so it's in the public light. It involves businesses and how teams are run. And Jeff Luhnow is a smart guy, and I love following his tactics and so forth. And the St. Louis Cardinals, and you know, that kind of, again, gold standard and kind of perfect way they always do stuff. It's fascinating to see how all this stuff is coming together. So hopefully you're enjoying the stories. There's going to be a whole lot more coming on about this. And again, I hope it doesn't go any further than a couple of employees going, "Hey, I wonder if you built the system the same way we built it, and let me break in. Ah, we broke in. Let's throw all the stuff out on the internet. He, he, he." And they didn't cover their tracks very well, and the FBI found out. So isn't it always on the movies that you call in or that you dial in from a at the internet from a library, and you go through some kind of router in international countries and all that kind of stuff. So I guess they didn't do that and just got busted. But fascinating story. Anyway, let's move on to kind of a couple of these pitchers that I believe are underperforming for the year. And again, I've taken a look at a lot of strikeouts per nine, walk per nine. I also take a look at batting average of balls in play. That's BABID, not with a T, with a P, BABID. So if it comes out as a T because of my poor enunciation, just know it is a P and not a T. And then I really usually take a look at xFIP over ERA. So I'm looking for a high ERA and a kind of a lower xFIP, which is an expected to end up fielding independent ERA, which really takes away, eliminates defense and also kind of eliminates home runs and park factors and things like that, as opposed to FIB, fielding independent play. So here are a bunch of players that I see that I think are, you know, kind of fall into this category. And the way I did it, I went at the FanGraphs, and you can do this as well. I simply go to the 2015 leaders, I sort by BABID, and I download it to a spreadsheet so I can manipulate some stuff, and I sort things certain ways. And then I go out to Brooks Baseball and take a look at the stuff of a lot of these players. And if I'm seeing really good quality stuff, lots of swinging strikes and whiffs on their secondary pitches, I'm thinking this is really good. And then somebody with some good control, maybe they're just getting unlucky. Maybe they're giving up a few too many home runs. And that's how I come up with the list. First guy is Tyson Ross with the Padres. Strikeout per nine, almost 10 strikeouts per nine. He is walking too many batters, though, 4.69. He's got a BABIT of 372. That is the highest in the league. So he is getting somewhat unlucky. His ERA is sitting at 402, but his fielding independent xFIP is sitting at 3.25. It's all about the walks. And it's never been this bad before. Tyson Ross has got really good swing and miss stuff. It's a guy that you probably should be considering adding to your team because he pitches for the Padres. You know, it's in that great Petco Park. So, again, looks like that he's got some room to correct, and it could be very, very good. Because, again, we're a third of the way into the season. So if his xFIP is almost three-quarters of a run less than his ERA, that means he could pitch somewhere in the high twos to low threes the rest of the season. And I think that would be very, very nice. Nathan Eovaldi is the next guy. This one I find a little interesting. He got totally torched last time he went out. A strikeout per nine of 6.4 and a walk per nine of 2.43. Second highest batting average of balls in play in the league, 3.71. An ERA of 5.12 and an xFIP of 3.91. Now, there's a couple of warning signs here. The first is the xFIP is still 3.91, which isn't great. It's above league average. He does pitch half of his games in Yankee Stadium as a righty, which means there's a lot of lefties showing their lefty power against Nate Eovaldi. And that strikeout rate is 6.4. And if you take a look at his fastball is one of the best in the leagues in terms of its average. However, his secondary pitches have never been there. His off-speed pitch, in particular, his kind of slurvy slider/curveball that he throws, is pretty good, but it's his changeup that has never really developed. And remember, folks, it's the pitcher's secondary pitches that get you out. It's all set up by the fastball, but until he learns to have better secondary pitches, he's going to struggle to strike out batters, but he's got great control at 2.43 strikeouts per nine. It's a guy I wouldn't be giving up on. I don't know if I'd be going out and giving up a lot for Nate Eovaldi, but it's probably a guy that I would roster, park on my bench, and see if he starts to regress back to the mean, and it could be very, very nice there. Gio Gonzalez. I'm getting a lot of requests. What the heck has happened for Gio Gonzalez? Well, a 3.68 batting average of balls in play, for one thing. ERA of 4.82 and expected FIP of 3.53. So you're looking over a well over a run better is something that he should correct into sometime over the second half. And again, same logic as we've used before. This could be a low threes, mid two kind of ERA the rest of the way. The strikeouts are there, 8.2. It's the walk rate's a little inflated at 3.74. The stuff's still very, very good. Everything is pointing to a guy who should be able to turn it around. He's not giving up a lot of home runs at 0.36. And let's see, do I have his? No, I don't. I don't have his ground ball rate, but it's something I think you should really be considering is do not give up on Gio Gonzalez. In fact, I'd be trading for him. Michael Pineda pitched a great game tonight, and the stats that I'm looking at show that this guy's got a long way to go in terms of a chance to really be even a better pitcher he is. I didn't really say it, a 3.74 ERA. He's gotten blown up the last couple of times out, but look at this, a strikeout per nine, 9.4, a walk per nine of 1.08. That batting average of balls, but he's getting really unlucky at 3.52. You know, home runs, you're going to expect a decent home run rate by Michael Pineda, and it's sitting at 0.84, which is pretty good. It's not great. And Yankee Stadium, you might see a little bit more about that. He's got a 50% ground ball rate, which you like. But his expected FIP, his xFIP is 2.60 on a 3.74. Michael Pineda could be a guy that you should be targeting, and you might want to give up a little bit more than you might think to get Michael Pineda. He could be a difference maker here in the second half. Part of his problem is he's got such a crazy delivery. It's very multi-part, so it's complicated. It's long. There's a lot of moving levers. He's a big guy. And if he's not pitching every 5 days, I think what happens, he gets out of sync, and then he can blow up. Part of the problem is the Yankees are trying to keep him healthy. He's pitching so well when he pitches that when he goes out there, he's pitching 6, 7, 8 innings, and he's building up those innings. So they're trying to rest him. Last time they rested him for 11 days, pitched terribly, comes back on 5 days rest today and pitches very, very well. So the Yankees are contributing to the problem with Michael Pineda. But for fantasy owners, if he pitches poorly the next time, I'd be all over him because there looks like a lot of really good reasons to own him. Three guys that are still, you know, starting to regress back to the mean or correct back to the mean that were at the top of the list. They're starting to move down the list is Clay Buchholz, Corey Kluber, and Carlos Carrasco. All are still buys for me at the moment. Clay Buchholz's ERA is down to 4.22. That's over a run better than the last time we talked. He still has an xFIP of 3.15, so there's still more room to go down. You could see him final ERA sitting about mid threes. I would not be surprised at all about that. So there's still some progress to go there. Same with Corey Kluber. He's got over a run better with his xFIP, so a 3.54. I think you could see him pitching extremely well the rest of the year. You still love the 10.33 strikeouts per nine, the 1.68. And it's almost a duplicate of Carlos Carrasco. You know, it's a 4.38 ERA and a 2.85 xFIP. So he's still not yet as corrected as well as Corey Kluber. So there's still a lot of movement that can come from Carlos Carrasco. Three more guys here that are potential people that are pitchers that should be performing better as we move into later here in the season. Andrew Cashner, check this out, 8.26 strikeout per nine, 2.86 walk per nine. He is really unlucky. He's just not getting any wins at all. He's out there pitching his heart out. The home run per nine is 1.38. And generally, if you take a look at the history of a pitcher, as long as your fastball is not flat, as long as you're pitching down in the zone, Andrew Cashner's fastball is a little bit flat. I will give him that. It's the mechanics are a little bit easily figured out, so there's not a lot of deception there, so the ball comes out pretty easy on him, so he will be prone to a little bit of home runs, but he plays for Petco Park. That 1.38 should regress. Most pitchers have about one home run per nine. That's generally the average. So if you see something above that, you're looking for a reason for that. Again, you're looking for flat fastballs. You're looking for a guy who pitches up in the zone or something like that. Well, Cashner has that a little bit. It should be offset by pitching in Petco. But he's got a 4.45 ERA and a 3.69 xFIP. So there's a lot of goodness there. Andrew Cashner, go on the fact that he's not winning any, go on the fact that he's got a, you know, way inflated ERA, and go grab him. This guy would be trading for. The next guy here is Drew Hutchison. Hutch had a good outing this past, this evening, in fact. Didn't give up any runs. I think 5 2/3 innings, 5 or 6 strikeouts, handful of hits, no earned runs. It was a good outing. 7.75 strikeouts per nine, 2.5 walk per nine. Again, another guy giving up way too many home runs, also pitches in a bad park, so you expect that to be a little inflated, but a 5.75 ERA and a 3.80 xFIP. So you're looking at a fairly major regression back to the mean here with Drew Hutchison. So you could see a guy pitching around 3 ERA the rest of the year. Having said that, I don't like Drew Hutchison's mechanics at all. He's still a short strider. He's doing that to get really good control, but it does flatten out his pitches a little bit. He doesn't get good extension. Therefore, you know, he will be always somewhat hittable. So you're going to have to factor that in to all of these equations because the stat lines really don't take a look at that. So 3.80, you know, he could pitch to 4 or 4.25 the rest of the year, but it's still a lot better than what he's pitching, which from a fantasy owner standpoint, you get instead of a 3 the rest of the way, if you get a 3.25, 3.30 the rest of the way ERA, I think it's all going to play extremely well. The last guy is Colin McHugh. Colin McHugh is a 7 strikeouts per nine, a 1.81 walk per nine, which you love the walk rate. He's also given up a ton of home runs at 1.36. Babbitt is sitting at 3.21. He's got an ERA of 5.08 and an xFIP of 3.96. I think Colin McHugh is okay. I don't love his fastball. It's not a plus fastball. It's an average to slightly above average fastball. He's got one of the best curveballs in the league, and that's what he lives off of. And if his curveball gets, you know, he loses any shape in his curveball, which happens a lot. It's a field pitch. It's a mechanical pitch, and it's one that's very difficult to command. And if he loses that command, he can hang a curveball, and that's, you're going to see that home runs go way up, which is what we have. And if you do, you're going to see that ERA go up. So while the stat line says he's a buy, I'm not buying it so much. I think I'd rather have Drew Hutchison than Colin McHugh here. And even though his stat line says, yeah, there's probably a buy, I think it's buyer beware. Let me give you a couple of guys who I think just five guys here that maybe are people that you want to sell. And some of these might be a bit of a surprise. First is Shelby Miller. Shelby Miller has a 230 batting average of balls in play. Again, 300 being the average. So this is a person who's getting very, very lucky. Most of the balls that are being hit are being caught. Now, again, when you have Anderson Simmons at shortstop, you expect a better than average batting average of balls in play. You just do, but not 230. You might expect a 300 as average. You expect maybe with that really good infield, including Freddie Freeman at first base, scooping things, that you might see a 280, 290 batting average ball play, but not a 230. His ERA is a 202. His expected xFIP is 401. Strikeouts per nine, 6.48. Walks per nine, 2.87. Three is, in the scouting parlance, we're saying is average. That's a 50. So you're looking at a 55 control. It's good control, not great control. You're looking at a guy that's got average stuff, less than seven strikeouts per nine. I'd be moving Shelby Miller big time. I think there is definitely, he's overpitching, you know, his stat line at the moment. He's overpitching his stuff as well. He'd be a guy that I would be moving. Aaron Harang, this one's easy. Nobody believes in Aaron Harang. 246, batting average of balls in play, 324 ERA with an xFIP of 457. The problem is nobody wants Aaron Harang. Everybody's trying to sell him, but nobody wants Aaron Harang. Just be really, really careful with Aaron Harang. Obviously, he pitches for the Phillies. You're not going to get a whole lot of wins, but he did this last year. He pitched really well in the first half of the year. He'll tire out. And that, what's his home run per nine? That 0.76 home run per nine could start to elevate. He's just not that good. And the stat line shows that. I get it. It's really hard to sell Aaron Harang, but if you can, I'd be doing it. The next guy here is Michael Wacha. Very interesting. He's had trouble striking guys out, 6.7. He's got a great walk rate of 2.05. You like that. His batting average of balls in play is 2.47. There's the warning sign, along with the strikeout rate. You put all that stuff together, his 2.48 ERA is going to regress up. His expected xFIP is 3.70. This is a big warning flag that's out there. It's been a warning flag from the very beginning with Michael Wacha. I know everybody loves him, loves the size. He's got good stuff. I don't know why he's not getting as many whiffs, as many strikeouts as he has in the past. It has gotten a little bit better, but it's something that, you know, you can get a lot from Michael Wacha. I would be considering moving him and selling a little high on him, because all the stats that I'm looking at are saying warning Will Robinson here. Next guy is Hector Santiago, 8.14 strikeout per nine. You like that? A 3.3 walk per nine, which isn't great. He's getting really lucky with a 249 BABIP. Here's the problem, a 259 ERA and an xFIP of 464. I've never been a big Hector Santiago fan. He does pitch in a pretty good ballpark, and that shows that 464, his regular FIP is 4.30. So you can see it's statistics are saying that, yeah, the ballpark is probably helping him a little bit, but, you know, he is going to pitch half his games there. So, but there's still huge regression coming with Hector Santiago, and would be a guy that I'd be really worried about. His home run per nine is 1.18. He does pitch up in the zone. He's not that tall of a guy. There's a lot of warning signs there. And that 3.3 walk per nine in conjunction with a fairly high home run rate, that you might regress a little bit. 1.18 is not too bad. It's going to make that ERA eventually fly up. Here's another guy that I think is interesting, and that's Trevor Bauer. 9.11 strikeout per nine, a 4.11 walk per nine. That means his 3.22 ERA has a chance to go up almost a run per nine. His xFIP is sitting at 4.16. The guy's got great stuff. He's got great secondary stuff, but that delivery is multi-part. It's very violent. He's worked on it a lot and has improved, but that walk rate is never going to be great. And while he can easily pitch a no-hitter, which I think he was pitching early in the season a no-hitter, and he wound up like walking six or seven guys. I mean, that can happen with Trevor Bauer. And when you walk that many batters, you always have a chance to blow up. I would not be owning Trevor Bauer in a dynasty league at all. He's a guy, along with guys like Tim Lincecum, that are going to have a really high peak early in his career. He's never going to have the Tim Lincecum peak, but this could be the next 2 or 3 years are going to be the best years of Trevor Bauer, because that velocity, he's not a big guy. He's not going to be able to log big innings. And with his very complicated delivery, you could see, you know, things, that fastball diminish a little bit. And once it does, those secondary pitches are not going to be as enticing, as effective, not enticing, as effective as they have been. So I think there's a lot of warning long-term with Trevor Bauer, including this year. A couple guys that I think are real, which I found to be interesting, Francisco Liriana, 10.78 strikeout per nine, 2.94 walk per nine. He does have a really low BABIP of 2.37, but get this, his ERA is 2.94. His expected ERA is 2, or XFIP is 2.57. His FIP is 2.86. Francisco Liriana, from everything I'm looking at, the stuff, the statistics, it's all working. And there could be a little regression just because his BABIP's so low, but I don't think there's going to be a whole lot. I mean, this is a guy that will get votes for Cy Young. And if he continues to pitch the way he is, Francisco Liriano and Gerrit Cole together, if Pittsburgh can stay on it, they have a chance. They really do. But they got to make sure they pitch Gerrit Cole if they do the play-in game. And Gerrit Cole is another one that is extremely real. This is a guy, 9.96 strikeout per nine, 2.04 walk per nine. His BABIP sitting at, what's his BABIP at? 3.16, which is very reasonable. ERA is 1.71. His XFIP is 2.68. You know, you say, wow, that's a run higher. Okay, so what? It's 2.68, so he pitches to a 3.25 the rest of the year. This is the profile of an ace. When you're pitching, you're striking out over a batter in any, and you're walking 2 out of 9. So that 2 out of 9 is a 65. Because 70 would be 2. So it's very good walk rates. A guy is showing really good control. And if you take a look at his hits per nine, don't have it on there, but I bet you it's very low as well. And you can say hits per nine are kind of lowering his batting average of balls in play. But if you're giving up a few hits, that means you got really good command and you are putting the ball where you want it, and makes it very difficult to get a lot of good solid wood on the ball. Yeah, that's kind of Gerrit Cole. So those two Pittsburgh pitchers are playing extremely well, and the stats back that up. Anyway, so I've given you some names: Tyson Ross, Nate Eovaldi, Gio Gonzalez, Michael Pineda, Andrew Cashner, Drew Hutchison, and a hold on Colin McHugh. And I've given you a couple of names, handful of names that, hey, maybe you can move them. And if you do move Aaron Harang, please tweet at me and let me know who you got for him, because unfortunately the fantasy world is all too wise to Aaron Harang, but he could be one of those throw-ins that is like, give me a really good player. Let me throw an Aaron Harang and somebody will go for it, and you'll get the player that you really want. Before we close, just want to tell you a little bit about my scouting trip to Wilmington. Wilmington's a great place to see a ball game. First thing is they open the park at 6:30 for games, which means you can get out of there between 8:30 and 9 generally. I do live about 2.5 hours away from Wilmington, so it's a pain for me to get there. But it's a really nice park. They do a lot of really interesting things between the innings. Of course, they've got that Pete and Chickie's place, which they also have in Trenton. That they have crab fries there, which is always really good. But I went primarily to see Manny Margot. Of course, I went Monday and Tuesday. Manny Margot did not play on Monday. But I did get a chance to see him in batting practice, 2 games. And the batting practice is pretty impressive. First of all, physically, it's fun to see. It was so hot out there. And I'll tell you a funny story at the end. It was so hot out there. Everybody in batting practice was in shorts. And it's really good because you get a chance to see these guys' lower halves really, really well. Manny Margot is a little guy. I saw him play once last year, and it didn't really strike me how small of a player he is. But he's got really spindly legs and a lower bottom half. And, you know, kind of compare him to Wendell Rio, which is about the same size of 5'11", and the Baseball Reference says they're both about 170. Wendell Rio, who was second baseman with the Red Sox, much bigger, stronger looking guy than Manuel Margot. So I always said he's 10 to 12 home runs. I'll probably ratchet that down, maybe 8 to 10. I love the bat speed. It's really, really good. But batting practice is interesting. One of the few guys that I saw in both batting practices that would let balls go. So if he didn't see a ball he wanted to hit during batting practice, he didn't hit it. In fact, yesterday I saw one, five pitches, four, the first four pitches went away, and the pitching coach or whoever was throwing batting practice simply threw the ball at him. They literally hit him. They did a joke, and they threw a soft toss. But it was like, hit the ball. And it's amazing because that's how his at-bats go. The guy has an amazing, mature approach for a 20-year-old, a really good eye, and he doesn't swing at bad pitches. And it's funny, I say that, and the first pitch that he got thrown, he was leading off last night. He took the biggest swing I think I've ever seen all year. I mean, it was a giant swing and missed everything. I'm like, what the heck was that? And of course, then he took a walk after that. Second at bat, deep into the count, he got hit by a pitch. Third at bat, he fought off a couple of pitches, and then just a beautiful inside out swing, and took the ball the other way. And then the final at bat, hit a home run, and hitting a home run in Wilmington's hard to do. So the guy's got bat speed. He's got some upper body strength. And I think as his lower half kind of fills out, he'll get a little bit more power. So I'm going to pull back a little bit on the power, and instead of saying 10 to 12, I'll say 8 to 10. But man, is he fast. Unfortunately, last night I didn't get a read from first home to first. Had a walk, a hit by bat, a single, and a home run. So you don't get many times to first base. But he was on first base, and I forgot who was hitting behind him. He roped a single, and he was already trying to steal second base and was flying around the bases. I mean, flying around the bases. He did get thrown out at home, but it was the third base coaches fought for stopping him and starting. It was that kind of thing. But the guy has plus speed, really good outfielder. It's interesting. Guys in high A can't hold anybody on. Literally, he did steal a base last night, and he was halfway to second base before the pitcher threw the ball. I'm not making that up. And he slid in, and the ball wasn't even in my frame, you know, kind of one of those things. And so easily stealing bases, but he's definitely got plus speed. I think it's 30 stolen base potential for sure. So, you know, Manuel Margot made my top 20 list, and I'm really happy that I saw him as my list was coming out, because I feel really good about it. I'm going to be the highest guy probably anywhere on Manuel Margot. I think he's going to be a dynamic leadoff batter. It will not be for the Red Sox because he will get moved. And they got to move him quickly because he's going to be, I'm telling you, he's on the Mookie Betts train. He will become a very, very hot property. His batting average has been a little down this year because he was hurt for a couple of weeks before they put him on the DL with a shoulder problem. And he was batting a 320 or 30 before he got injured. And then after that, after he got injured, he didn't hit at all, and then he got back in. Now he's raking again. A couple other guys I did mention, Rendell Rijo. I like him a lot. You know, doesn't have a whole lot of speed. I got him as a 55 runner, but I think we'll have a little bit of pop. And you know, again, another guy that probably will not make it up to the Red Sox, but I think would be a decent second division starter, potentially a first division starter. But you know, I think the ceiling is kind of a solid regular, but a nice little player. And the final guy that I saw that I liked a lot was Sam Travis, who is their first baseman, a big guy, big raw power. I don't know how many home runs he's had this year, but not a whole lot of bat speed, some bat speed. So most of the power is there from leverage, country strength type of thing. But a guy that I think could be an interesting first base prospect here in the next couple of years, and a guy that you should probably put on your fantasy radar. Not telling you to go pick him up right now, but there might be something there. Really liked what I saw. Decent first baseman, I think good enough to play in the major leagues, or obviously a DH position. So those are the three guys. Absolutely nobody out in that I saw worth really mentioning in Kansas City. And I saw two games, and it just wasn't much there. Carlos Garcia, Ramon Tomez, there's nothing there. I mean, it's amazing because Kansas City has been so deep for so long to kind of see them without a lot of players I found to be interesting. I'll close with the following, then I'll get off. You know, everybody wants to be a scout, and you know, it is a blast to be able to get into games early. And so I got there around 4 o'clock and left at, 8:30-ish, right after Manuel Margot hit the home run. So I stayed. What did he hit the home run in the eighth inning? So I didn't stay for the whole game, but most of the game. So I was there for a good 4 hours, and you know, I get a chance to always enter the game, you know, the parks early to catch batting practice when I want to. But I looked at the weather forecast as I was coming down to the Philadelphia area on Tuesday morning. I said, oh my gosh, it's going to be 90, 95 degrees. And I usually dress in jeans or slacks and a, you know, polo shirt because, you know, I want to look reasonably nice when I go there. But I'm saying, man, I better grab some shorts because it's going to be brutally hot. I'm not stupid. I'm not going to sit there for 4 hours and bake in jeans. So it's just, I grabbed some shorts. So I got down there, went, had some meetings in the morning in Philadelphia, got out there in the afternoon, go to my backseat, grab my shorts and go, uh-oh, where are my sandals? Where are my, not sandals, like flip-flops, where are some tennis shoes? Where are some other shoes besides my dress shoes, my black dress shoes? I'm like, oh, I forgot something else. I look in my trunk, which is not very big, but I'm like, I usually have running shoes back there or flip or something. Nothing. I got nothing. So I'm going, oh boy, what do I do? So I said, okay, well, I'll just go in with my jeans and I'll bring in my scouting bag. I have my shorts on. So I sat there for about an hour and a half baking. I'm going, this is just not good. I'm miserable. I got another 2.5 hours here. I said, screw it. I'll go to the bathroom. I'll put on my shorts and I'll wear my dorky black dress shoes. And that's what I did. I sat there the rest of the game. I had a couple strange looks. Told people I know I was a fashion plate here, but I didn't really care. And some of my scout friends saw me and just shook their head. And I said, hey, you know, I'm comfortable and you're not. And, but I look like a complete dork. And it was great. And so if you ever see a guy in shorts with black dress shoes on again, it very well could be me. So that's my story. And that's life as a scout when you try to throw everything in your car to fit all occasions and you screw up, but you still got to get out there and do it. Guys, thanks for joining me for almost 45 minutes. And we'll see you on Sunday. I'm not sure what we'll be talking about on Sunday. I'll be on Sirius XM here in about 45 minutes. If you download this immediately and get this, please join me. I'll be on, I think, with the NFBC guys, Sure Talking Prospects. Take care, everyone.